everyone. Welcome to Let's Talk About It with Dora Sherry. Get ready for some...
It's time.
It's Dora. Let's talk with Dora.
Let's talk about it.
It's Dora.
Come on, y'all, let's talk about it.
Welcome to Let's Talk About It with Dora Sherry. Get ready for some lively discussion.
Let's talk about it.
It's Dora.
Come on, y'all, let's talk about it.
Let's talk with Dora.
Hi, guys. Welcome back to Let's Talk About It. I'm your host, Dora Sherry. I want to start tonight's show by asking you all a question. Have you ever watched somebody's podcast and thought, I could do that. Well, I could do that if I knew where to start, how to start, and what it would cost me. What if I told you you could do that, be totally trained, and it wouldn't cost you anything? You too could have a voice in a podcast like me. Tonight's guest is going to tell us how. Let's welcome Michael Bejas, the owner of Trim Radio, the network that sponsors this podcast.
Hi, Dora. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. Thank you. Still trying to get over that upper respiratory thing. Got my chamomile tea and honey and excited to tell everybody how they could do what I'm doing right now if they wanted to. Tell us a little bit about Trim Radio, how you started it. It's been a blessing to me, Michael. Let me just tell you that. You guys came into my life and I don't even have the words to describe it. And I'm a writer, I'm an author. So tell us a little bit about Trim Radio, why you started it and exactly what kind of platform is it?
Well, it's really funny. We all were kind of working on another network that doesn't exist anymore. It was WCET. And I had two friends, an old friend of mine, that had said, listen, we're doing this show. Come on in. We think you'd be great for it. I went on it and I loved doing it. I didn't have this big audience around me, so I didn't feel paranoid. And then we kind of veered off from them and I got with Victoria and Stu and Raskella and I said, we could do this on our own and let's have a totally different concept with it. So all of us together, we had a few meetings. And we got together, and of course, Victoria is a beautiful architect.
Oh, she's amazing.
Yeah, and with her talents and everything, she set pretty much all of it up. And we tried a different couple of different platforms along the way, and we were like, okay, you know, this is okay. And she said, I want you to take a look at this. And of course, you have to have a very open mind when you're doing things. And she'll tell you that I do. I kind of... This is cool. Let's give it a shot. So we did. And we ended up here on StreamYard. And of course, we decided, because we were contemplating, should we go FM, AM? Should we get into all this? But we ended up on StreamYard. I have a dog looking at me. I have my...
I have a cat laying beside me, Michael. It's okay.
he's giving me... He's doing an ACP commercial right now, looking at me like, what do you have? Food? But we, so pardon me, but
no, that's life.
So we then, you know, formed this. And of course, I told Victoria, I said, I want to do a different concept. And Raskella and Stu and her really came up with the name, Trim Radio. We did have another person on there, but he went through some medical issues and stuff, and we kind of had some irreconcilable differences, and it just became us. But it became Tim, Raskella, and Mike, and you know. But after he left, now it's, you know, we just kept the Trim, and it was nice. And Raskella said, "Hey, we cut the bull." And served the truth, which Trim worked out great because you're cutting it, you're trimming it. So it worked out really nice. And I had said, I don't want to charge anybody. And I felt that this is reasonable enough that I could, you know, now that I'm medically retired, divorced to, but I was getting to that point to where I was like, I can afford it just as it is. Why not bring people in that want to be podcast people that are just starting off, and we're not going to charge you a dime. You know, it gives them a chance to, and really I only had one rule, and it was just, I wouldn't budge on this. It's just the one rule: how you ran your show, what you did, what you talked about, what you believe, I don't care. But you can't go against derogatory things against God. That was, you know, Christ, that was it. But I'm not going to tell you, if you don't believe, I don't care. That's up to you. But don't air it. That's, I think that that's where you have to have some kind of boundary. And that was my boundary, because I am, Victoria will tell you, that for me is a boundary, and no dropping F bombs or GD or anything like that. Just be clean. I think that this is a thing, whether you're workplace, whether you're at home in front of your kids or anything, that's not unreasonable requests. And so I tell people, you got conspiracy theories, if you have this and that, feel free. Enjoy. I am not going to sit here and get involved with any of that. The best thing that, and of course they always tell me I'm the owner of it. I pay for it, but, if you are like a boss or look that way, is stay out of it. Yeah. Don't micromanage. Let it evolve on its own. Let it grow on its own. And how they get to the end result does not matter to me. It's about bringing people on. So if we do have listeners out there and you're very interested in doing podcasts, come on over. I'm not going to charge you anything. What's the point in it? What's the goal in it? It's I'm not greedy in any type of way at all whatsoever. Money means absolutely nothing. We can't take it with us. So, we're not taking anything. I'm blessed of what God gives me, and I own nothing. So, that's just how I operate.
Wow. Michael, I'm jumping at the bit to say something about when you said you don't charge anything. That was the thing that blew me away the most with you guys. Stu Scheer, you mentioned him, God love him, my friend Stu, for probably two years kept saying, Dora, you need to get on this Term Radio. And I thought, well, that'd be great. You know, I'd love to do a podcast, but God, I can't afford gas in my car, let alone a podcast, and I don't know where I would start even. I did radio, but that's different than podcasting, and I can barely cut copy and paste. I can't even say it, Michael, let alone do it. And everything that I have experienced with you guys, from Victoria contacting me and you contacting me and her guiding me through everything, she has taught me absolutely every bit of this. She's babysat me, and she's babysitting right now. She's not on camera, but she's watching it and everything. The hours that she's put into it alone. And I kept waiting that, okay, what's the catch? When are they gonna hit me with money? It's never happened. It hasn't happened.
It's not gonna happen. And no,
it isn't. I see that. And this has been a godsend for me, an absolute godsend.
And don't worry about the babysitting, because Victoria walks me around. I feel like more like the locker room kids, and she gets me through. So I look at it, and then during the year, whatever she wants, I have to talk money into her. Victoria, let me pay you for your time. Let me do this. And I do that, and of course, she's so gracious, and has done that. We're blessed to have her. And I am thankful, and really I'm pretty bad, because in the last month to 3 months, I have not been able to get on the show as on a regular thing. I've either dealt with my sickness or, you know, a family member, my mother. I take care of her. She's 92. So she, you know, she's gone through a lot. We almost lost her twice. And that's another thing you can ask later or whatever. And I'll be more than happy to share. I'm an open book. So fire away.
Oh, yeah. I want to talk about, because we talked a little bit before we started recording about some of the medical issues and things that you've been through. And I want to talk about that, too. First, I want to ask you, what kind of shows do you have on Trim Radio? Right now, you have a variety.
Well, I did. And I told Victoria I wanted to cut one back. And I had a show called Take Point 22. I had an LLC, a limited liability for that one, because veterans were so important. I'm a vet. And when you lose some veterans that are friends, and seeing the things that, you know, I have seen, the wounds, the injuries, and all the different things, and then knowing that we were losing 22 a day to suicide, and of course, experiencing the mental thoughts of that. And, you know, I always like to tell people that I have a gun for protection for my family, and we're in a great neighborhood. So I never have to pull it out. I couldn't even tell you the last time I pulled it out. And then I have a Bible that I put on the gun, and then a roll of toilet paper. So when I cry and I get overwhelmed, before you reach for the bottom one, you go to the top one, which is the Bible, and get yourself out of it. And it's a hard thing to do. So I'm on medication for it. And, you know, and for the panic attacks and everything else, because I was waking up and still wake up with horrific nightmares, just things way out of the blue that you don't. And they're awful. And it's
some things veterans never talk about. We never know what they experienced, what they saw, what trauma is there, you know, and what can come back many years later, Michael, you know, 30, 40 years later, something can come back like boom, and you're, like you said, nightmares, panic attacks.
It's and I wasn't frontline. Understand something. But you have a guilt. You have a survivor's guilt. You have, you know, and then you lose somebody that's close to you that's in the military, and of course it's happened multiple times. And then your friends, and of course military people, we flock together, regardless of whether we're frontline or we weren't frontline, because there's a brotherhood there and a sisterhood.
That's right.
And we can all relate. And I've talked to so many veterans. I've talked to thousands of veterans. So it's kind of a giant family. And the civilian world and our world are two different animals.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we have an attitude, maybe right, wrong, or indifferent, but our attitude is stay out of our world. We are, when you have a business that big, and our business is going to war and winning a war. Okay, it's a death business, and you know, and of course, you know, I was on the medical side, so our business is, there's no other business that has lasted long with our business. We started it all before your government was our business.
That's right.
Because that's what formed the government, was us winning that business. You know,
that's so, right.
You know, I look at it that way, but it's a scary thing.
Yeah.
And the nightmares had gotten so bad. You know, then it would incorporate. And of course, when you deal with some of the things that I deal with, then you see your family affected, and you have terrible nightmares about something happening to them, getting in unpredictable situations and how to try to climb out of it. And it is a mind. There's not a good way to put it.
Yeah. It's just a simple thing of being afraid to fall asleep. because there's no control in that dream world.
I sleep better during the day than I do at night.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot. My son passed away, my 18-year-old son, in 1990, and I went through many nights where I was so afraid to go to sleep because of the nightmares I was having. So, you know, you can't really compare one thing to another, but I can only imagine, you know, that trauma. Trauma is trauma. No matter what caused it, it's still trauma.
My condolences.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. His life, though, Michael, has been such a blessing. That child today, my book, Reflections of an Angel, is my love story to my son. And he's my angel now. And it's amazing how he shows up in my world all the time. So and how much his story and mine have helped other mothers who are grieving the loss of their children. So, you know, some things turn out to be a blessing, you know, in disguise.
It is, and it's hard to go through. And of course, we were a military family. My dad and my dad's brother, my uncle, both military. They were captains in the Army. You know, my dad passed away after a very long sickness. You know, he had peritoneal dialysis and heart issues, and he finally succumbed to it. And I was 20 years old.
Oh,
and
wow.
I'll tell you the story. It's an incredible story. Might take a little bit, but I'll explain the story
to
you.
Okay, we got time.
Yeah, and of course, I lost my brother. He was 19, and he was by another Marine at Camp Pendleton. That was a very suspicious shooting. And then we found out he had arguments with this guy. So very suspicious. And this guy, there's two different, a lot of people believe that, hey, there's not double jeopardy in this country. That's a lie. Okay. Yeah. There is a double jeopardy. If I were to go down as a civilian and I was in the military and I get arrested or charged with a crime out in the civilian world, of course I got to do my time there. I had to do that. But then when I get back to base, they're going to punish me as well. So, you know, because it's, you know, AWOL. So absent without, you know, leave. And you're going to have to deal with that. So it is. It's a double punishment. And you will get, you'll be in the Navy, as we say, captain's mass, and go through the courts or do whatever it is, but you'll get punished again. And then I lost my other stepbrother, which is really my brother, Dean, because they were so close. They went in on the bomb system and went down to Paris Island and were in the Marines. He never recovered. He ended up succumbing to alcoholism, and it ended up taking his life. So, but growing up, having five brothers, two older brothers, and, you know, my two younger brothers. So me trapped in the middle. Now, it's very funny. The oldest brother, he shows up. Nobody thinks he's going to show up. He's a surprise. And your parents are not prepared. Okay.
Yeah. So
they're not prepared. The next brother that comes along, they're prepared, but, you know, they're like, eh.
Another surprise.
And then you get the middle child. So if we get hurt or something, they're like, walk it off. And then you get the two younger ones that are always treated like this. And you might hear your mother warn them, I've been through three of you already. The two of you I've learned, I can take you out. It's very interesting. God bless my mom for going through that. But my when my father got sick and you know, with the heart and the kidneys and everything, he died on, and I want you to remember the number, 19. Keep this in mind. So he died March 16th of 1986. He was buried on his birthday, March 19th of
1986. Wow.
Which was so hard for me, because then I questioned my relationship with God. And one of the nightmares that haunts me is that I actually cursed God. I made that mistake. And I blamed him. And I'm thinking, you know, what kind of a God would do this, you know? And you go through this. Well, 2 years later, my brother, who was 19 years old, you know, and my dad and my brother were born on a Sunday. Tommy was born, I think, on a Monday. My dad was born on a Sunday. Both of them passed away on a Sunday. And he was 19 years old, both born in the 1900s. And his birthday was May 19th.
Wow. So
now I'm trying to figure in my mind, okay, what is this? Why so many 19ths? And of course, both born in the 1900s, both pass away in the 1900s. So 19, 19, 19, 19, 19. And people with a mind that like mine try to process this. So many different, you know, conditions, and you're trying to process all this, and it's very interesting. When my brother was shot by another Marine, he was African American, and of course I cussed God, and I was so angry, and then I said, I got to get in the military. I have to understand this. So I did. Coming out of a bad relationship, I went in, and again, irreconcilable differences. I won't talk down about anybody or have them talk down about me if they're not here to defend themselves in front of me. So it's just called ethics, you know, as far as that goes. But while I was in the military, I was downstairs working. I was a dental tech, an advanced dental tech, 8752 DT, which they got rid of and now we're considered corpsmen. So yeah. I'm working in the basement and pouring up models, and there's just me and this other man, Herb Simmons, a second-class petty officer. And Herb he's pointing down, and he's like, that's right, that's right, and then pointing in the air. I mean, he was excited. He was filled with joy, you know, and just excited and excited. And finally, after I got the models poured, I had to walk over to him. I said, Herbie, what are you doing? What are you reading? And he closed it real quick and slid it off to the side. He said, Bayosh, you can't handle this. And challenge accepted. Okay. You know, challenge accepted.
Yeah.
What do you mean I can't handle this? Let me show you something. And of course, you get to that point. He was reading the Bible.
Wow.
And that's what started it. And to the point to where I bought a Bible. And here was this guy, and how does God work? Crazy. It's way beyond our comprehension. He's above our thoughts. He's beyond our thoughts and everything. Okay. This, you know, and of course you're fighting racism because you're thinking, oh, it's crime from the African-American, population. And here, an African-American pulls out a Bible, introduces me back to God.
Gave you the best gift of your life.
I could cry because I have, that was one of the things that's helped me get through. And all during this time, when we were working at the Navy Yard, this is, you want to talk coincidence. This man who did this for me came back with the diagnosis of lupus. SLE. I have lupus SLE. And we were stationed at the same Navy Yard. And, you know, he didn't feel right. He was getting sick. Well, I started to notice I'm getting sick, more exhausted. I was going and working out at lunch. They were, our captain was great. He let me run with him. And then you were free to work out. So we didn't have a typical half an hour lunch or an hour lunch. No, he let us. If you're doing this and you're doing this to better yourself, as long as you're doing that, feel free. Just be back at this time. And, you know, again, not micromanaging because he knew the production. And Herb was doing a great job. I carried 23.5% of the production at that time. And but I knew something was off in my body. You know, you feel something's off. I knew something was off. And then I developed encephalitis, which was just a fluke. And I'm thinking, where did I get this? And thank God it was bacterial. And so now I'm really questioning what was going on. And your body's like a bunch of switches, your bone and stuff. You know, they click on and off like a little chemistry set. And of course, in 94, I got out because I knew I couldn't keep up that much with it. But I didn't want to quit the military. I absolutely didn't want to quit. So, and I was blessed. I got to do the AFIG, the Armed Forces Inaugural Committee. That is when Bill Clinton was elected. So they ended up driving for dignitaries and, you know, taking them in the rapid transit is what we called it, and driving them around Washington, D.C. So you had to know the city. Okay. You were trained. And we went on and, you know, as I was doing that and everything, and of course, my first child was being born at the same time. And then I got promoted by a brigadier general at that time. And I drove for, believe it or not, Ron Brown, who was the Secretary of Commerce back then, if you remember.
I do. So
I was in the parade. I drove, and right behind, I believe it was the motorcade of Washington, D.C. police, I was the first one to start that. So, yeah, so very wonderful honor and privilege. But once I got out, that's when things really, I moved down here to Columbia and started developing sickness again. And of course, we were in Desal at one point, and the doctors there said, you have a tumor. And it's in your head. And my mother, God, like I said, God love her, said, nope, we're not even playing with this. We're going straight to the Cleveland Clinic. She knew people, and we drove on up there. And the doctor said, you don't have a tumor. You have a serious infection in the lining of your brain and your brain stem. And, you know, he goes, how long, how do you stay awake? Long. He goes, I can't stay awake long. How are you doing? I had been up 72 hours straight. I could not do that. And of course, I was dealing with vertigo. I was dealing with this sickness. I was, I finally got to the point to where I couldn't drive. And I crawled to an urgent care that I knew was on my way to work. And once I got, I left the car on the side of the road. And once I got there, they took me immediately to the hospital. And I can't even tell you which hospital it was. I don't remember.
Wow.
One of those things.
You've been through it, my friend. Still going through it.
Yeah. So if you go back to 1990, 91, I knew then something wasn't right. But then then we moved up to Ohio for a little bit. Of course, we went through some financial hardships. My mom said, why don't you come stay with me? So we went up there and stayed with her. And then we were like, okay, I love the South way better. So I always like to say that I was a Northern boy born in the wrong.
You was.
But because I lived down in the South longer than I lived up North, I'm like, there's no argument about this. I'm a Southern boy. So, and I got that part fixed. But when I was down here, then it was 2004 when this irreconcilable differences on this relationship came to a head. And of course, I have two young kids. My second one was born in 99. And of course, I was a Mason too. So, I knew Stu. Masonic, and you know, Stu's a Shriner, of course. But I had gotten into Masonry, and I wanted to be a better man. I wanted to be even, you know, better. And it doesn't always work. But you try. But, you know, I did that. I was successful at that. And, of course, in 2004, the doctor had said, you know, he did a blood test. And he said, listen, I want to get you back in here. I want to make sure this isn't a false positive. And we did it again. And he goes, just one more. So after the third one, he said, you have lupus. And back then, they were looking at the ANA. And, of course, now today, there's another letter to it now to make the acronym, you know.
So anyway,
I was like, okay. And here I am going through this divorce. Here I am going through this sickness. And I'm like, and I was devastated. And I'm trying to think, okay, after many tears and being upset and going through it, I said, I got two boys to raise. And, you know, my mom was with me at that time. And my stepfather, Flash, who was Navy, who I, you know, that's why, a great man, very gentle, just like my dad, loving, caring, always looked at me as like I was a son. So, and of course, a huge heart. So I came to the conclusion, all right, I don't have time for this sickness. So, you know, they put me on medication and everything. And we tried a bunch of different medications. And of course, I was dealing with that. But just as we're having a conversation in 2012, I was having one with my my employer, my best friend. And all of a sudden, I got a cramp in the side of me. And I was like, okay, you know, what is this? And, you know, and I told him, I said, you know what? I said, do you ever pull a muscle? And he goes, yeah. And then it got worse. Then it was like, okay, I really did something here. And I was looking for a bruise. 45 minutes later, I'm like, I broke a rib. Oh, I got to go. I broke a rib. So I called my son. He's taking me down to the hospital. I couldn't breathe. And I remember being on the floor in Dorn VA, and I was trying to get to my feet. That's instinct. That's what the way we're taught. Pain is, you know what I'm saying? You've got to get through it. Your life is depending upon it. And that's just one of the things that they trained us to do. And I heard people saying, stay down, man, stay down. And I woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning. My lungs partially collapsed. And they diagnosed me with sarcoidosis. So they found granulomas inside of my lungs. And they're like, listen, this could be a one-time event, or this could be something you have to constantly watch the rest of your life. Well, that, you know, I had a couple of bouts with some of these different things. And I was like, you know what? I knew where it came from. I knew where it came from. We were in a building in Washington Navy Yard that had asbestos that they hadn't ripped out. Yeah. When they started ripping it out, these guys only hung bags. You know, today they're in these full, you know, uniforms and everything, ripping this stuff out because it's so bad. The particles and everything get carried and carried and carried. Well, the gym was right next door that we were working out at lunch to stay in shape for Terry. Right next door to exactly where they were ripping it out. And it was at the Navy Dental Yard Clinic. So, and then I was working with a metal that the military used, and it had beryllium in it. Well, beryllium is an extremely toxic metal that they finally quit using because people were getting their teeth made. And they were having to pull it off because it was infecting them. It was causing the secondary problems, which we didn't know at that time. So, you know, but they gave us tests. And I was like, no one ever mentioned it. So they knew, but they never mentioned it. And I decided at that point, you know what? I'm going after them for this. Because if this is going to affect me, and when I'm being told in 2008, when I finally jumped on the VA for benefits, and they're like, sport, sit down. The average lifespan back then was 28 to 35 years. And when you look back, of course, in 91, I discovered this. I'm like, holy crap, I've got 20 years at best. And frightening. And I've got sarcoidosis now. And I realized that this illness, this, you know, autoimmune changes its face about every 5 years. So you're fighting something else then. Something else pops up. And you're fighting that to go along with all the pain that you have, joints.
Never-ending battle.
It is its own war. It's a 24/7 humiliating, degrading, dignity ripping illness that I like to say wants to beat the crap out of you. And that's a nice way to say it. And, you know, then in 2020, I was on hydroxychloroquine, you know, to help deal with this. But they had blood tests. They never told me I had a blood disorder now. Never said a word. And he knew. The rheumatologist knew. And that really made me mad from Dorn VA.
Wow.
He never said a word. But he didn't know what it was. So I called. I complained. And of course, the doctor, the head doctor of the hospital said, well, you definitely got something going on. So they put me on methotrexate. And for 2 years, they didn't do a thing. And finally, this guy retired. And I was like, good riddance, because he was impossible. I mean, he'd make appointments and then go on vacation. So I was very frustrated. But it was free healthcare. And Dorn really is a good hospital. People don't understand. Yeah, the VA has some things going on, but they are trying to improve. So I give them credit for that. They don't always get it right, but who does?
Yeah, so nobody does.
Nobody. You know, and that's one of the things in you just have to expect. But in 23, and of course, Victoria having her and I, you know, having similar problems.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, you know, I don't want to share her business. But our friendship grew. And then in 2023, they finally said, we're going to refer you out and send you over to oncology. Okay. Well, the jig's up at that point.
Yeah.
And I get oncology. And as they're looking at my blood, she said, you have lymphoproliferative blood disease, which is blood cancer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. She said, you're actually on the right medication. They prescribed you the right medication. We're going to up it, but you're on the right medication. So I go back again and they do more blood work and they said, okay, let us, we're changing this diagnosis a little bit. And it turned out to be enlarged white leukocyte lymphoma. So your body that's constantly attacking itself is constantly doing this to mine. And now my white cells are way bigger than what normal people are. They're picking a fight wherever they can. And it's usually if you bruise your elbow or if you scrape something, that's where it's going. And that's the first place it's going to fight. So now you're dealing with that. So a cold for you is a week to 2 weeks. I'm a month and a half.
Yeah.
Guaranteed. So, you know,
when I was on, this one feels like it's going to be.
Oh, it can be. But I had one for 6 months. They actually cornered me one time in the hospital in 2017 and we're live on the news. And they're like, you know, you're going to get your flu shot. Have you gotten it yet? Dumb me said, no, I didn't. So they had me on TV getting a flu shot. And, you know, whether they used the clip or not, I don't know. But I was like, okay. And right afterward, when you make a mistake like that, you feel stupid. I wanted to suck the words back in, right? You know, no, I did not. Like, you know, why did I say that? But I had the flu for 6 months.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then, of course, I had 5 out of 6 doctors at the hospital tell me, if you don't get this COVID vaccine, you're going to die.
That scared all of us. I mean,
yeah. So here I am like an idiot. I hadn't had COVID all through 2020. I was on hydroxychloroquine, an antiviral, which has some properties. They don't tell you exactly what it has, but it's an antiviral. They use it for malaria, and it happens to work real well for lupus patients.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's very interesting. And I decided to get this stupid shot. And I hate to say it, I'm not an anti-vaxxer, okay? I'm not. I get my pneumonia shot, and I've been diligent about that. I'm going to tell you, I believe in the pneumonia shot all the way through.
Yeah.
I will not do flu shots. I will not do COVID shots. I'll roll the dice, you know, because I already know. I ended up getting COVID in 2021 after I had the series of shots. But then I started having problems, memory problems, which I still have.
I've heard that a lot from people.
Fatigue. All of a sudden, now I had an enlarged heart. It got to the point to where I couldn't beat this. And this stuff put me down for the first amount of 2.5 months. And my boss, being such a good friend, he's like, listen, I don't want you here. I don't want you trying to even do this. And he still paid me.
Oh, man.
He
That's
still
a blessing.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
A good man with a
great that is.
And he did that for my family. He did that for me. And God bless him for that. I will.
For sure.
I love his family. I used to go over Christmas dinners and do that. And I knew his entire family, his sisters, his brothers. I knew all of them, and we were all close. And it is like a family away from a family. It really was.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
If one of us did something wrong, the other one got on him like, what were you thinking? And after that, I think that didn't help either. And that's what, you know, it just exasperated kind of everything that was going on. And finally, about 2 years ago, I looked at him and I said, "L." He goes, "You're done, aren't you?" Hardest day I had walking out of that lab.
I'll bet.
30 years. I mean, I went to football games with this guy. We went on vacations and did things. So it was so hard. And he goes, I go to give him the key, and he said, "Hang on to that key."
Aww.
He said, "You hang on to that." He goes, "I might call you for advice, or whatever." But it got to the point to where I couldn't help the sickness anymore. I couldn't stay in one seat more than an hour and a half there. And my hands were so sore trying to push the models and wax. And it was, I've had one of the, give me a minute.
Let's take your time.
But, okay, there we go. I have distinct privileges that God bestowed upon me that I could go in and do something that I loved every minute. It was probably 98% love, and loved what I did, loved what I designed, loved to see patients' faces. And then they would thank you, and you were like, you know, when you hear that, that's worth more than any paycheck. That's worth, you know, because you're changing somebody's life. And I remember the one, his wife came in, and she said, "God bless you." So being in healthcare, it was a blessing because you're doing for them, and you don't think of it as, okay, this is just a paycheck and I hate this job, and you regret it was such a wonderful atmosphere.
I mean, you're changing lives, you know, you're giving smiles back to people. I can tell you right now, Michael, this award-winning smile was given to me by Dr. Gockman, my dentist in Sarasota, well, Venice, Florida. And he probably has no idea what he did for me.
Well, it makes a difference. It honestly makes a difference. It builds confidence.
Yeah.
It has so many benefits to it. And my atmosphere that made me, I think it got me through it all, was we'd come in, I'd have my coffee. I had a coffee machine there. Okay. And he never dictated to me how he wanted things done. He always looked at the end result. I would go in there and just get to my work. And then he would turn on the TV and we'd end up watching Frasier, Cheers, and it was all sitcoms. So most of the time, or if it was a different day, we would watch all these murder mysteries and, and different things. So, you know.
But now you can watch a podcast.
Right. But it was, our lives were humor. So and we laughed. We laughed so much. And it was hard to walk away. And now that I'm home, because I don't go out that much, maybe shopping or whatever with my oldest son, we're actually in the garage. And of course I can't do the physical work and he's a mechanic, and all the kids that used to come to the house with my two boys, I let them work on whatever they wanted. And they'd always move my tools around and do everything. And, you know, you'd be like, you know what? I'm going to find that tool later. I'll run it over with the lawnmower. It'll be a little rusty, but it might
work somewhere.
We have a car that we've been building probably for the last 5 years, you know, a Cobra. And we've built this up. We started from the frame up.
Wow.
We built this thing. We had the shell, but we ripped everything out of it, painted it, did it. And then I patined it. And, you know, because I couldn't paint like I had done before, and I just wasn't happy. So I had another guy that was excellent at painting, and he said, you shouldn't paint anymore. And I was like, okay, it doesn't hurt my feelings. You know, that's not my fault. Building the engines and doing stuff like that, that's me. But he said, I have an idea. And he said, why don't we make it look like it's been through a war? And this car had no rust on it. So we put muriatic acid on it. And, well, he did. And then he put graphics all over it. Army, Navy, Coast Guard, Marines, Air Force. And we have it all around the entire car. And I said, all right. So as we did this, I didn't want all these beautiful amenities inside. I said, I want it to look like it's been picked from a Humvee that's broken down and you need the parts, and you're in a dire spot to take those parts so you can get to safety or you can continue on fighting. I did this in memory of the veterans, and it's going to go to car shows.
Very nice, Michael.
I want little kids, and everyone's like, wow, you're going to get. So they come in and they look at the paint job and they're like, that's beautiful. It's gorgeous. And I want the veterans' kids to be able to get into the car, grab the door handles, touch it, you know? Yeah. And everyone's, every time I go to a car show, they're like, look.
Don't touch it. Yeah.
I want the opposite. Yeah. I want them to understand what their parents go through. Unless you've been handed a flag, I still believe this. You get handed a flag, and then when you're out there and they're doing military honors, the first volley of a 21-gun salute will scare the bejesus out of you because
it's
this is very surreal. It's very real. Yeah. And, of course, you know, after the last one, it was a final goodbye. And then he's lowered in. And it was so hard. And of course you go back in your mind and you're like, I did everything wrong and I did him so much injustice. And you never think about the good things that you did. And I did the same thing with my dad. My dad wasn't out there. We weren't throwing footballs. I think we threw it maybe one time, or baseball one time. And it's one of those things that life is very, very short. But as I was going through most of this trauma, and of course, being through two or three relationships that did not work out the way you want, because they're not the right people. Yeah. What do we get into a pattern of our mistakes. So we get into this pattern and then we look for the same thing without even knowing it.
Yeah, without realizing.
It's okay. So I like to say it's like putting an ice cream cone on your head and using your tongue to beat the snot out of yourself.
Okay? You know?
So, you, or doing the same thing over and over again.
Yeah.
And you know, and of course this last time I was just like, more reliant on God, which I should have been to begin with.
Yeah. Yeah.
I backslid and I drifted away. And then of course now I'm there. And of course I have since 2020, I've read the Bible 6 times and I'm almost done to the end and I'm going to do it. I will do it the rest of my life. It's one of those things. And of course there's so many layers to peel back on it.
Yeah.
There's so many different things. So a lot of people look at it and they're like, I can't read this. They literally alone get through one and they're not saying, wow, this relates, this crosses over, this crosses over.
Yeah. To really study the Bible.
And then to ask God, I think a lot of it is too, you have to ask God for knowledge and wisdom with it to try to get an understanding on it. And then I realized out in the world, oh my gosh, these people are, they're crazy.
Yeah.
And, you know, and once you start to follow God and follow Christ, you're in for it.
Yeah,
you're going to go through some stuff because now you're aware. So a lot of people like to say, you know, a prime example, the word mourn. When you think of the word mourn, what do you think of?
Death and sadness and mourning someone.
Okay, so we have death and sadness and mourning someone. But mourn could also mean sorry for what you did.
Yeah.
Mourning for your sins. For your shortcomings, it could also mean bringing yourself down to a level of humility before God.
Yeah,
it has so many, and these are those layers that you peel back.
Yeah.
So you look at stuff like that. I love the book of Ezekiel. I love all the books. I love Job. I love Isaiah. Matthew. John is a wonderful book too. But going through it, it said, in Ezekiel, son of man, do you see all these bones? Yes, I see all these bones. And they come back to life. Only you know God. And, you know, then it talks about the muscles, the sinews and everything, bringing them back to life. Well, people take that literally, which really, of course, God can do that. There's no, if he can make a donkey talk, he can definitely do that. If he can make a seed part, he could definitely do that. There's nothing he can't do. He's beyond it, outside of it, in it, through whatever. There's nothing that he can't do. But it could also mean the 12 tribes of Israel were going against God. They were not putting God first. Yeah. So he's talking about reviving Jerusalem, reviving Judah. Reviving the 12 tribes, a representation of the bones of the dead, brought back. So you get into these different things. I did that in Genesis. You go back, and I promise I'm a talker, so I apologize.
Well, we're gonna have to wrap it up pretty soon, or I'll be in trouble. You're gonna have to come back on and talk some more to us, Michael.
Last one, I promise. but in the book of Genesis, Jacob, he had a dream, and he had his head on a stone, and he was dreaming about angels ascending and descending down a ladder.
Yeah.
And if you go back to that, even Abraham. But if you go back to that, who's the cornerstone? You know.
Yeah.
You're putting your full trust there, and of course. Narrow is the path and wide is the gate to failure. So, but narrow is the gate to salvation. There's a cross reference all the way back from Christ to that. So you have to look at these things and study them. And of course, I wasn't taught in theology. I wasn't taught in seminary. I wasn't taught in any of that. It was just a matter of going through. And because my mind, you know, I deal with bipolar. Now, I've dealt with that since the military because of my sickness. And anxiety attacks, panic attacks, and everything. I mean, I've had them where they put me in the hospital. I don't even remember where I am. Again, talking to you, like right now. And then all of a sudden, I was doing this with Ellis. I was on the floor. Yeah. I don't remember it. The girls next door at the dentist office came over, and Ellis said, they're all crying in the back. They thought you were dying or dead.
Wow.
They got me into the ambulance, and my hands were shaking, which I have palsy anyway, a little bit. But my eyes were going back and forth, and they thought I had a stroke. So they were taking me down to a hospital. I don't know which one they took me to until they told me which one. Panic attacks. So I take medication for that. I take medication for the bipolar. I take medication for lupus. I take medication for the leukemia. I take, you know, all kinds of different medications. There's so many. I have a whole cabinet that is dedicated what I do. And yet here I am still standing.
That's right.
You know, 35 years, and they told me you're supposed to be dead.
Yeah.
You're going to die.
Yeah.
And I have just, it's yours, God.
That's right. That's life, right. It's his anyway.
Life is a 15-round title fight. It plays dirty. It will throw everything at you, including a sink full of dirty dishes.
Yeah.
And you're going to get tired in the rounds. When you do, give it to Christ.
That's right.
And I'm going to tell you, he'll fight those rounds for you when you can't. But he wants you to put in the work.
Yeah.
So
he helps those who help themselves.
And that's me. And
yeah.
I know you need to wrap it up, so I don't want to hold
I'm you. Sure glad you're doing what you're doing, because I'm sitting here because of you.
Not because of you.
Because of your whole team and your dream. I have one more question for you. One more question. Were you in radio before?
No.
What made you go to radio, podcasting and?
I'm telling you, it was Barry Klesch and Papa, and they said, we want you on the show. We think that you would be very good. And they got me into it probably back in 2015.
Okay.
Never knew anything about radio. Never knew anything about podcasting.
Yeah.
I didn't know a thing. And they loved having me on. And then they kept inviting me back.
Yeah.
And then they said, we want you on there full time.
So, I'm laughing, Michael, because that's exactly how I got my radio show, People Helping People. My former radio, and went through International College of Broadcasting. I had no dream. A friend invited me to come let him interview me. The next thing I know, they loved it. And I'm co-hosting the show. And graduating from broadcasting school.
Yeah.
You never know, Dan.
It's crazy. And of course, I do Life Walk with Christ God. And, you know, I came up with that name, Life Walk, because that's exactly what I've done.
So you
can't do that without him. And, you know, I came up with that. Victoria came up with everything else. Yeah. And I said, you know what? I don't care if it reaches anyone or not. If it reaches one person,
That's right.
Yeah. So I look at it that way, and I need to get back on it. But my mother has, she was sick. The doctors missed it. She hasn't walked in 8 months. So, so we have hospice here, and, you know, we almost lost her twice. And it's mom. Honor your father and your mother. So.
Yeah, I don't care how old you are. That's still your mama.
That's right. And, you know, I'm going to do that. And I won't let her go anywhere. We're not going to put her in a home or do anything. And Sherry's right with me. She's like, she's not going anywhere. So even if I said I've had enough, she would say, she would probably hit me on the back of the head and say, you better pull your act together, because she's not going anywhere.
That's your mama. And on that note, Michael, prayers to your mom. And thank prayers you. For you too. And you've got to come back on and talk to us some more. Please, promise.
I promise. I would be honored. So
we'd love to have you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. And I am honored. And I'm no boss. Understand that. you know, I'm no boss. They're really all in charge, not me. I don't know what I contribute.
That's how I always felt too. I've been the boss. They call me the boss many times, but I never felt that way. I always felt like a team leader. I just knew who to hire.
I just smile. I'm like, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
Talk to Ruskella. Talk to the people of Ranch It Up. Talk to Peter Kling. Talk to all the different hosts, especially Victoria.
She's
a class act. She will help guide you through the way. She knows what she's doing. And come on, because you know what? I'm not here to make money.
No, well, you're not making any money on me. I guarantee it. But you're sure doing God
on me. Listen, I'm not making any money at all. I don't want to make any money at all. You know what? Money just causes you problems and headaches and everything like that.
That's right.
why even throw that in the mix? But feel free, please. Come on. You know what? What do you got to lose? What do you have
That's
to lose?
Right. Nothing. You might end up with a podcast just like this one. Yeah, you never know. Maybe even better. And now, where can they go? Trimradio.com?
Yes.
They
can go to trimradio.com, which will put them in with Victoria. You know, she handled that. I'm not even sure I know how to get my mail out of there. you know, she will handle that, or one of her team members. You know, then, of course, if they want to talk to me or she'll say something, I'll go on and friend accept them on Facebook or wherever, and then send them a note. I hope you come on. I'm excited. And I am. So, I want them to, because I want it to grow. My vision, in all reality, Dora, is to have it so filled up.
Yeah.
And so many of these people telling their stories, recounting all the, telling them what they think and everything, that it just explodes. And, you know, what a gift that would be, because I don't know how much longer I'm here. But if I were to go and this thing grows like that, you know what? It's in perfectly good hands. Victoria's got it. Ruskella's got it. you know, this is something that, all the people have. And, what a legacy. Isn't that?
Yeah.
It just shows you what God does and what God can do. So on that note, I don't want to hold you up.
I just was thinking of that country song I heard recently. It says, when you pass on, what are you going to pass down?
That's right.
On that note, I'm going to say thank you. God bless you. And we'll see you again.